Welcome to the Confluence of Ideas from Confluence Investment Management. I'm Phil Adler. Every quarter, a committee of Confluence professionals reviews the five asset allocation models offered by the firm and considers revisions to the models to reflect the state of the markets and the current outlook. Today, we review changes that took place during the latest portfolio rebalance heading into this year's third quarter, about a month ago. So I'm excited to hear some updates on the committee's thinking. Our guest is Confluence Asset Allocation Committee Chair Kaisa Stuckey. Again, to refresh our memories, the five asset allocation models offered by Confluence exist along the risk spectrum. They are income, income with growth, growth and income, growth and aggressive growth. Kaisa, before we address specific changes in the allocation models, I'd like to focus on how the broader Confluence outlook outlined in your latest report holds up in the face of some market events that occurred fairly quickly following its publication. First, there was the July jobs report. Seems like a long time ago, but it was the catalyst for a brief but sharp sell-off in stocks. And adding to the concern over jobs at that time was the triggering of the SOM rule, which compares recent unemployment rates and has historically been accurate in predicting a recession. The Confluence third quarter outlook does not include a recession during the three-year forecast period. Do you remain confident that there will be no recession?
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me. You're correct. We're constantly asking ourselves about the likelihood of a recession and follow-on implications. Our process relies on the analysis of fundamental value of macroeconomic and market data. So the discrepancy between the underlying fundamental value and the investor perception of that value is what keeps this industry endlessly interesting. While the markets may have sold off, we're seeing a balance of economic data and policy response that still looks encouraging for risk assets, so no recession likely. The SOM rule was really the buzzword of this summer. In essence, it's a straightforward but reliable concept that states that when the three-month average U.S. unemployment rate rises by 50 basis points or more from its 12-month low, a recession is underway. In July, the rule was triggered when the unemployment rate increased to 4.3%. We'll be closely monitoring the August report for a confirmation of a trend in overall weakness in the labor markets. But let me just tell you, sure, there's been some softening in the labor markets. The details of the labor report reveal a more compelling story. The rise in unemployment was actually driven by growth in the overall labor force, not by layoffs. So layoffs are often a key factor in triggering recessions, but we aren't seeing broad weakness in economic indicators. In fact, layoffs are not prominently featured in company earnings calls. And with the recent indication that a rate cut is in the cards, the likelihood of a recession is further diminished.
Kaisa, Confluence forecasts that economic growth is likely to continue to support domestic equities. Do recent earnings and also credit card delinquency reports suggest any major reason for caution?
There's a lot wrapped in this question. First, the macroeconomic backdrop. We don't think a recession is imminent, as I mentioned before. Recent economic volatility since our portfolio rebalance date will likely lead the Fed to deliver cuts faster than initially anticipated. But that does not mean the economy has fallen off the rails. We remain constructive on U.S. equities due to longer-term trends such as supportive fiscal policy, a data-dependent Fed, changing supply chains, and aging demographics, among other factors. Now, we could talk for hours about each of the factors mentioned, but I'd also like to emphasize the difference between slowing growth in indicators and declining indicators. So, you know, the first and the second derivative of the rate of change. We've seen more slowing growth rates in economic readings and less outright declining metrics. Something like the wage growth has slowed, but according to the Atlanta Fed, it still increased 4.6% year over year, something that was not seen for over 10 years before the pandemic. I'll quickly reply to the other parts of the question. Rising credit card delinquencies is not a new trend. In fact, newly delinquent credit card balances have been increasing since the middle of 2021, and the rate of growth has actually declined in the most recent data. Consumers' confidence has weakened somewhat recently, but the Conference board consumer expectations have strengthened over the past few months. Now, on the other hand, personal savings rates have declined as households spent down their pandemic savings. It's usually at the fringes that the early indications of weakness develop. And while we keep a close eye on the conditions, we've not seen enough distress to change our constructive expectations for domestic equities. Finally, last point here. You asked about earnings. Earnings season is almost complete for Q2, and overall it's looking healthy at about 8% year-over-year increase for the S&P 500. Perhaps more importantly, earnings growth is broadening, and we could expect this trend to continue.
Kaisa, Confluence in the latest outlook sees a likely increase in volatility. Now, since the report was published, there have been two trusted volatility indexes suggesting higher market risk, and volatility did increase sharply as the Japan carry trade unwound. And it's possible, perhaps it even seems likely, that the unwinding is not over and may spread to other currencies. My question is volatility rising more quickly than you expected?
We've been talking about structurally higher volatility for a while. Part of it is that we've been coming off a period of low volatility in macroeconomic environment over the past decade and a half, and a relatively calm geopolitical landscape over the past few decades. We're seeing the effect of geopolitical volatility as the U.S. continues slowly withdrawing from its global hegemon role. In addition to two hot conflicts, there are numerous developing situations that have the potential to escalate. But on the other hand, macroeconomically, since the 1980s, globalization has kept inflation low by focusing on the efficient supply chain. So currently, we're seeing the return of shorter supply chains, as well as a move from just-in-time to just-in-case inventory management. Both those trends lead to a higher structural level of inflation. So not only are we not surprised by the volatility, we've been anticipating it. Now, a short answer to your Japan carry trade question. The potential impact of financial markets has proven less disruptive than anticipated.
Well, you touched on this in our last quarterly discussion, but could you remind our listeners about steps Confluence is taking to deal with volatility and mitigate risk in its portfolios?
Right. You know, time in the market, diversification, and valuation management are cornerstones of our risk management. So first, time in the market, not timing the markets, has been shown to be instrumental in wealth accumulation. Investors are better off staying invested throughout the cycle. To aid this goal, Confluence offers the five portfolios you mentioned along the risk spectrum for investors to find the level of volatility appropriate for their financial goals and time horizons. Second, diversification, the proverbial last free lunch in this industry. Confluence creates portfolios by including low correlation asset classes. For example, we include gold as a geopolitical hedge, but we have also seen increased central bank reserve buying of the metal. Both those factors move gold independently of risk assets. And third, allocating two asset classes with lower valuations is also a risk management tool. So we like mid and small caps, both of which are trading at a significant valuation discount to large caps.
One other recent event in the equity markets was a rather dramatic, although it was quite a short-term event, but it was a rotation out of technology stocks. Again, it didn't seem to last for very long, but what do Confluence models anticipate in the way of stock market rotation?
Yeah, this is a good follow-on question here. Our analysis looks at both the potential growth rates for sectors during the anticipated market regime and the valuations of these sectors today. Since the pandemic, we've seen a narrow domestic equity market rally with a handful of stocks trading at valuations that are quite elevated. History suggests that this valuation discrepancy is unlikely to continue. No tree can grow to the sky, as the saying goes. Over the forecast period, we anticipate a broadening of the equity rally, but we also include unique subsectors in our portfolios that represent uncorrelated risk-reward opportunities. Currently, we have an aerospace and defense, as well as uranium subsector overweight. Within mid and small caps, we include a high-quality screening ETF.
Just a few more questions, a couple of more questions, Kaisa. Following the July jobs report, we were bombarded with various forecasts for a 50 basis point Fed rate cut at the September meeting, with more to come. Money markets, if I'm correct, anticipate about 100 basis points of cuts by the end of the year. What is Confluence looking for from the Fed?
Right. So we wrote at the time of the rebalance, the Fed remains data dependent. We still very much believe it. Jay Powell gave a clear signal in Jackson Hole that monetary policy will turn dovish. Recent employment data have shown signs of weakness, leading to concerns by the Fed. In contrast, the Fed noted an optimistic outlook regarding the downward trajectory of inflation. While the baseline expectation is for 2 to 4 rate cuts this year, it's important to remember that Powell's Fed is data dependent and will react accordingly.
Turning to bonds, looking at the Confluence stance on bonds, longer dated maturities are clearly out of favor. Why?
Good question. Now, the yield curve remains steeply inverted, with short maturity yields higher than longer maturities. The Fed would need to implement 625 basis point cuts in order for the Fed funds rate to yield less than the 10-year Treasury, all else being equal. As a consequence, absent a sizable move higher in long rates or a drastic cut to the Fed funds, yield curve normalization is likely to occur well beyond this year. At the same time, we believe higher inflation will pressure long-term bonds higher, meaning part of the yield curve normalization occurs from the price declines among long maturity bonds.
Now, as we look at model changes implemented by Confluence in the third quarter, we see a decrease in the allocation to short-term bonds in the income with growth model, while allocations to short-term bonds are maintained in the more conservative income model and the less conservative growth and income model. Explain?
Our process looks at risk at the portfolio level, meaning we can use diversification between asset classes to balance risk. In the income and growth portfolio, in the current inverted curve environment, we focus on the intermediate maturity bonds. This posture limits high levels of reinvestment risk from the shorter maturities while avoiding significant price risk from the longer maturities. At the same time, in the same portfolio, we added to our speculative grade bond allocation as the economy and risk markets are expected to do well over the forecast period.
And the other major model recommendation change occurred in the three least conservative models, beginning with growth and income. In each case, small cap allocations were reduced in favor of mid caps. What's relatively attractive about mid caps?
Well, let me first reiterate that we have an optimistic view of domestic equities across all capitalization. But the current valuation deviations between market caps are remarkable by historical standards and also are unlikely to continue in the longer term. We expect the amplified effect of earnings growth and valuation normalization to offer a particularly attractive profile in the mid-cap equities. However, higher current interest rates impact capitalizations differently. Small-cap equities, which hold a larger proportion of floating rate debt, are therefore disproportionately affected by higher rates. This could negatively affect earnings growth in small caps.
Finally, Kaisa, I'm struck by the fact that normally your quarterly reviews do not result in wholesale changes to your recommendations, and this was also the case this quarter. Do you consider this a validation of your process?
Absolutely. We formulate our capital market assumptions over a 3-year time frame. We would have to see some tremendous moves or unanticipated trends to move our 3-year average expectations. We tend to move stepwise with the market cycle and not make sudden changes.
Thank you, Kaisa. If our listeners would like to read the detailed Asset Allocation Outlook report, that's easy to do. Just access confluenceinvestment.com. That's confluenceinvestment, one word. And you'll find a tab for the Asset Allocation Quarterly on the top right. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. And this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.